Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's October the 3rd, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana. In agricultural news, the EWG says a permanent disaster assistance program benefits only a few farmers in the Plains states. Tom Harkin wants to move a farm bill on the Hill this week. And the Germans are in the middle of a biodiesel crisis. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. Then we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. That'll happen just after the bottom of the hour. And along the way, I'll tell you what to do if you suspect a glyphosate-resistant weed population has infiltrated your field. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Hi, this is AM580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Spend more time harvesting and less time pledging. WillPledge.org.
Taking a look at the numbers in Chicago as they settled on this Wednesday afternoon. Futures like this in the December wheat, 927 for the soft red, the settlement price 4.5 cents higher. March contract at 935.5 up a nickel, and the May futures were a penny higher today at $8.46. December corn, $3.44.5 a bushel, down 4.25. The March down 4.5 at 361. And the May futures at 371.5, down 3.5 cents. December corn at 395.5, unchanged on the afternoon. November soybeans, 951, up 7.25. January futures at 969.5, up 7.5. And the March contract up 8 cents at $9.81.25. November for next year for the bean pit, 949.5, up 4 cents. October bean meal at 266.10, up $3.20. December futures up 3.10 at 271.80. October bean oil, 38.11, that's up 0.08. And December futures at 38.70, up 10 for the day. October live cattle now, 95.10, the high, or rather the settlement price, 62.5 cents lower. December futures were down 57.5 at 97.40 for the live cattle. October feeder cattle, 114.90, down $1.02.5. November futures at 114.70 were down 97.5 cents. Lean hog futures 58.67.5. The settlement price 47.5 higher. December futures up $1.22.5 at $60.60. And February is at $66.75. We're up 72.5 on the afternoon. From the outside markets, November crude oil trading $79.90 a barrel. They're down 15 cents for the day. And the Dow at 13,957 is down just about 90 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, the dollar is lower and the Dow went below 14,000. What else should we be paying attention to?
Well, you know, the dollar actually rallied late in the trading day. At least on my screen, Todd. The big factor here continues to be big crop management, and even though some of my customers say, Cooley, that's old news, it is still big news in the fact that it is probably bigger than the largest bull fund buyer in the world can manage. And the reason I say that is that it's going to be close, and we always love a USDA report to confirm it. But whether the USDA will confirm it this time, but there's going to be the fear that at some point in time the production level on corn is going to get awfully close to 160 bushels to the acre. The yields are good. All indications are that it's over a big geographic area. And as a result of that, it is going to tax the system. And then from the demand point of view, we see some holes in the system that possibly will slow down some exports. Also, ethanol's been one of the major supporters of corn, and then at the same time, you know, some cracks in feed usage. So it all adds up that the corn crop is going to be very adequate to take care of demand for 2007 as of this time frame.
So what do you make or mean by big crop management? Do you mean the infrastructure needs to be managed or that the producers need to be managing the crop that they're harvesting now as if it is a really big crop?
I think it is all the above. And, you know, I think it's going to be a logistic nightmare to get this crop put to bed. And as a result of that, it's also going to signal that, you know, possibly a 2 billion to 2.5 billion bushel corn crop is big enough to last even into next year. You know, at the Farm Progress Show, we brought up, a few of us started to talk about buying acres, and I think we're going to take a little whiteout on that idea that we really don't need to buy many acres. You know, in time, we will see the CRP acres. I think it's 2.4 million. I think next year it's close to 4 million acres, and the following year, 4 million. So we are going to see a gradual acreage increase, but also we are signaling around the world to put the pedal to the metal for expansion of grain. And we see this expansion in grain production with high fertilizer prices that are also occurring here in the U.S. But what the bottom line is in the think tanks is without fertilizer, it's hard to maximize yields. And, of course, that's something the land-grant colleges have been preaching here in the United States for, what, 50 years anyway.
Well, yeah, since 72 or 73, I know, at least at a minimum. And prior to that, that was the first time, I think, that they came out with a nitrogen formula from the University of Illinois. So tell in that range. I don't recall exactly what the year was. So tell me how you view the whole thing then.
Well, I think that we will see some support in here. You know, at some point in time, you know, even the biggest bear market will see some support. But it's going to take time to handle this 2.2 to 2.3 billion bushel corn carryover, and of course, you know, the scary part here is that we won't probably know the real size of the corn crop until the final January production estimate. But it's going to be large, and you can rest assured there's going to be some major piles on the ground that a person and the end user is going to manage. I thought it was. I did listen this week to your commentary from Greg Johnson there at the Andersons, and you know he did an eloquent job on you know how they were going to handle this tremendous crop, and I thought it was very interesting. And you know, it's just put it away and wait for cars to show up. To hopefully the export demand will be there to handle the big volume of grain.
Would you be an advocate of cash sales for the corn that's coming out of the field at this point and for next year's
Well,
crop?
Hopefully you've been a little better job of marketing than that, because we did see fours in a lot of corn prices, you know, 410 and above in the July corn. And, of course, if you are blessed with grain storage, you know, last week was the week. And this week is, you know, erosion of some of the carry. You have to take advantage of the carry. There is some calls that people can write, but the real deal now is you know, you just have to get the crop put away and do it. But, you know, I don't see any major price rally here for the next 30 to 45 days.
You know, I was looking at the bean chart, the continuous November bean chart. It's only been above $10 five times since, what, 72 or 73?
You know, only in major times. You know, we all remember 19—I don't remember 1948, but I heard about it from a lot of my older country elevator managers. But, you know, in 72 and the opportunity to take and convert these large volumes of yields into high prices, you know, occurred this last week. And it was something everybody should take advantage of. Now, you know, I do hear this thing, well, my beans only made 45 or my beans only made 50. But if with the right kind of hedging strategy, and if you had your own bin, you could get a $10 bill on some beans, and you could get $4 for some of your cash corn. And it's just too big an opportunity not to have taken advantage of it. And our other feeling is that we think the RSI on the farmer's bearish bullish ratio is extremely bullish. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't think they unloaded enough volume last week.
So they'll have crop yet to sell, and they should sell it on rallies at this
point?
Well,
you know, it is that. And, of course, our contention is that we'll see maybe another half a bushel on F.C. Stone's report. I think 43.5 is a realistic one. I think the Chicago trade is still trading something under 41.5 bushels. So I think we still have to put a pin in the bullish balloon on beans here for a while, because I think the major signal is also being sent to Brazil and South America to put the accelerator pedal on planting a lot of beans. And, you know, our sources indicate 8 to 10% more, and that's a logical thing to do. And, of course, another commodity, the rain is going to rain in some of the areas where the wheat is going to be rather mature in Australia, but that area does need some rain, and it's still a question mark on how much of that area it's going to benefit.
And finally, were you very surprised by how well the numbers held up today after heavy losses yesterday?
Well, you know, the marketplace is extremely efficient. And, yes, you know, if the farmer wasn't selling at $4 and $10, he probably isn't a big seller at $3 and, you know, 50 cents down in beans and also, you know, 20-some cents down in corn. So that part doesn't surprise me as much. And I do think that there was probably some commercial buying and fund buying even was noted in wheat with export demand there, and also some fund buying in soybeans today as well.
Paul, you have a good afternoon.
Profitable day of trading.
Thank you much. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens each and every Wednesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own AM 580 chief meteorologist Ed Kieser says tonight it'll be clear across the two-state region to partly cloudy in some areas, patches of fog forming overnight. Lows will range from 50 in far northwestern Illinois to 60 in the far south and in Chicago. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, says Ed. Highs will range from 81 in the far northern part of Illinois to 88 in the south. Tomorrow, wind speeds 5 to 15 miles an hour. A few isolated showers may pop up on Friday of this week, but most areas should stay dry. More widespread rain will likely arrive late Monday or Tuesday of next week. Very warm conditions for October through the weekend, and warmer than average weather should continue right into next week, although some temperatures will be trimmed a bit by the clouds and a few showers. Dave Dickey's here now with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, a report released yesterday by the Environmental Working Group says permanent disaster assistance would primarily benefit a handful of states, cutting a swath across the Great Plains from Texas to North Dakota. The EWG analysis says over the past 21 years, Congress has spent $26 billion in disaster assistance. From 1985 to 2005, just over $14 billion went to farmers in Texas, North Dakota, Minnesota, South Dakota, Kansas, Iowa, Georgia, Florida, Nebraska, and California. EWG President Ken Cook says for those states, disaster aid is, in his words, routine and predictable, and there is no reason to think that future disaster aid would not follow the same pattern. Senate Ag Committee Chairman Tom Harkin says he's now hoping to move a farm bill out of committee Thursday afternoon if the Senate Finance Committee completes its $9 billion permanent disaster aid package early enough in the day. Harkin says a permanent disaster assistance program, though, is not a done deal.
Once that tax package is added to the farm bill, it's open for amendment. And who knows, but will the entire Senate want to go along with that, or will they want to do something else with it?
Harkin also says he's willing to negotiate a smaller direct payment cut than his original $4.5 billion proposal, one opposed by many on the Senate Ag Committee.
That figure has not been settled yet. We've been working to find other sources of revenue. Different things happen. We look at the different budget items that we're looking at now, and so we're considerably less than that now, probably in the $1 to $2 billion range.
Senate Ag Committee Chairman Tom Harkin. The Energy Information Administration says U.S. ethanol plants produced 13.051 million barrels of ethanol in July, up 518,000 from the previous month. The U.S. also imported 1.526 million barrels of ethanol in July, up 44.2% from the previous month. Domestic supply on July 31st was 9.696 million barrels, up 629,000 from the end of June. Germany is in the midst of a biodiesel crisis. The German industry is slowed by high feedstock prices, new biodiesel production coming online soon, new taxes on biodiesel, and demand that is not keeping up with production. Verisun Energy Corporation says it is suspending construction of its 110-million-gallon ethanol plant in Reynolds, Indiana, because of current market conditions. The company expects to resume construction in 2008, depending upon the return of more favorable market conditions. Ethanol prices have dropped nearly 50 cents a gallon in the last 2 months. Verisun originally announced plans to build the Reynolds facility on April 18th of this year and completed site grading and preparation work in August. And today, ADM breaks ground on its first wholly owned biodiesel production facility in the U.S. The North Dakota facility, when completed, will produce 85 million gallons of biodiesel using canola oil as its primary feedstock. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find most of the daily ag programming as a podcast or an MP3 file. Just download it at your will. That's at willag.org. And don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter. It's really good. It's really free. And you can do it at willag.org. Well, up next, Illinois farmers should keep a lookout for weeds that slip through their control programs this growing season. As you'll hear, the University of Illinois would like them to send samples of weeds that could be glyphosate resistant. There are two confirmed glyphosate resistant weeds in the state of Illinois, mare's tail and water hemp. And while there are confirmed populations of each of these plants, scientists at the University of Illinois would like to have a better idea of their dispersal across the state. That's why U of I Extension weed scientist Don Nordby is asking farmers to mail suspected glyphosate-resistant plants to the Urbana-Champaign campus of the state's land-grant institution.
If you suspect that you have glyphosate-resistant water hemp, you can go out to your field and cut off the top portion of the plant, the seed head part of the plant, and put it in a paper bag, and you can mail it to the plant clinic at the U of I, or you can look up Aaron Hager or myself and mail us the samples, and then we will run them through a screen in the greenhouse and determine if they are resistant or not.
Nordby says there are a couple of good reasons for a farmer to send in the samples. She says it's a very good thing to know what type of weed is in the field, especially if it is a glyphosate-resistant weed. That's because it takes a different set of management tools. Given that, Don Nordby understands farmers may not be very willing to get proof that a resistant weed has shown up, if not developed, in their field.
And it's actually a very beneficial thing to know if you have a resistant weed or not. You may not want to tell your neighbors, but to have your state specialist know, we can help you out and help you figure out how to control this weed before it becomes out of hand and affects your neighbors.
So, Illinois farmers should take time to climb down out of the combine cab this fall to collect a few weed samples, especially water hemp. They can mail them to Don Nordby or Aaron Hager at the University of Illinois or to the plant clinic. Just call your local University of Illinois Extension office for the address. For U of I Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. This is WILL AM 580 on a Wednesday afternoon. We're joined by Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana, to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
And a good afternoon to you, Todd.
Tell me about the harvest season in your area.
Well, it's in full swing. I'd say we're probably half done in corn. Maybe 30%, 35% in beans, and it just happened so soon and so fast and very little rain to stop it that I think every elevator is having a little space problem at this point. We happen to be full on beans, and we got a train maybe coming next week, but we were just kind of ill-prepared, I think, because most trains are ordered for the what we commonly call the gut slot in October, November, but things are going really well here. Bean yields in some areas better than they expected, a lot of poor ones, but corn, fantastic crop.
So you're still taking corn at this moment, but no additional corn soybean bushels, is that right?
That's true. We've still got some space at both elevators, and we're stacking on the ground south of Terre Haute, so we're fine on corn room, but beans, it looks like we'll probably be next week before we get dug out on those. Everybody went from corn to beans, and they just hit us really, really hard, and I think a lot of the elevators around here are full at this point, so handling beans is a little bit of a problem.
How long will it take you to work through that process to get back opened up?
Hopefully, if we have a bean train next week and we've got some singles moving, that should give us enough space to make a pretty good dent, and then we'll just try and keep dug out all the time if we can keep the trains coming. But here again, we had all of our trains ordered for October, and everybody wants them at the same time, so we'll just have to wait till we get one in here and then take another look at things.
How did train values handle yesterday's move down at the futures market?
Well, train values are basically, I'd say, about unchanged from when you and I talked last week. They weakened just a little bit on the upfront because as bins get full, a lot of this corn's coming to town. So they weakened up just a little bit. The deferreds are doing fine. Bean values, I think, probably will go down. We dropped our basis naturally since we're full. That's just kind of what you do.
And your bids are for the day?
All right. Our cash corn today is 306, cash beans 876. And next year's wheat is 588.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Todd.
Kay Whitlock is with Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Wednesday afternoons. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated will be along. Right now, it's time for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Illinois Senate Democrats are pushing to restore some of the budget cuts made by Governor Rob Blagojevich, even though their leader says he's still against that. The Illinois House voted overwhelmingly yesterday to restore most of the $460 million in cuts Blagojevich made to the budget. Now it's up to the Senate to determine if those cuts will stand. Senate President Emil Jones has repeatedly said he'll uphold those cuts, but yesterday he said sometimes people change their minds. His party colleagues say the cuts will hurt their constituents by taking away money for social service workers, veterans, and colleges. They hope to persuade Jones to allow at least some of the cuts to be restored, either by overriding the vetoes or by passing another measure that authorizes spending on them. A student group says the University of Illinois should do more to make sure officially licensed apparel with U of I logos aren't made with sweatshop labor. The group is asking the university to join 37 other schools in signing to the Designated Supplier Program. It would require clothing brands to contract only with factories to pay their workers a living wage and allow them to organize. The U of I already adheres to a code of conduct on sweatshop labor, but the student group calls that ineffective. A former police officer is going through the first of six trials involving charges of sexual assault. David Lewis is accused of harassing six women while he was a part-time officer in the Village of Belgium. The first trial involves four charges involving a dancer at a strip club who accuses Lewis of trying to grab her during a traffic stop. Some rural Champaign County residents apparently won't have any further say in a plan to enhance drainage along the Salt Fork River. About 30 people from the St. Joseph area attended a morning court hearing to state their objections to a maintenance plan that was submitted by the Upper Salt Fork Drainage District. It's supported by a 400% tax hike. Associate Judge Holly Clemens limited comment to one written objection and now plans to rule on the proposal later this month. Residents say while the district's proposal is a step in the right direction, there's no guarantee the removal of trees and dredging work won't do more harm than good. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner. He's the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
What do you see in the weather?
Well, it looks like we're going to see more of this very warm weather pattern that we've been in here for a little bit. This is going to continue for a while longer. We do have a couple of interesting cool shots that are being advertised in our midday modeling today, which is going to catch some attention for a little while. First of all, we've got a little cutoff low pressure system that will wander across the Midwest. This occurs primarily as we go into the late weekend and the first half of next week. It's going to produce some persistent shower activity, especially in the northwestern Corn Belt. Those areas are probably going to see some extended harvest delays because of this additional precipitation occurring on top of other precipitation that has already occurred in the region. It's not a big upper-level low-pressure system, but it's just enough to aggravate some of the need for drying across the region. We are going to find that that system will go ahead and move itself across the eastern Corn Belt during the first half of next week, and as we go into the latter part of next week, we'll get a little bit of a break in precipitation. A few days of net drying will occur, and our temperatures will become a little bit cooler behind that system. But the more significant cool-off is being advertised in the midday modeling today for sometime after the 15th. In fact, it looks like the cold air comes in on the 15th and goes on out to about the 18th or early on the 19th. And dominates the eastern half of the country. Now, it's the first time this has showed up on the models here in recent days. I think that there's reason to buy into it a little bit. Our trend model here at World Weather Incorporated does suggest that we should see a little bout of cool weather during mid-month, and I think this will fit relatively well. But, of course, it's the first time it showed up in the models. We'll see what happens next. The precipitation outlook in the second week of the forecast, though, is quite light. So there will be an opportunity for improved harvest conditions in the upper Midwest.
What do you mean by cool weather? Would that be normal cool weather for the fall time period or something a little colder than usual?
Well, actually, I think it's going to be something a little bit closer to normal. We are so far above normal on our temperatures right now that it's going to feel terribly cold out there when this hits. But in reality, it's only going to be bringing our temperatures back into a normal to slightly cooler than normal realm, and I don't think it's even going to be persistent long enough to really have a big impact on us. But I do think we're headed into a period of chillier weather, something a little bit more typical for this time of the year, and it will probably lower some of the soil temperatures out there, but it should not interfere with winter wheat planting or any other field work for that matter.
Let's wrap up with your view of South America.
It still looks pretty dry right now in northern parts of Brazil. Mato Grosso, the number one soybean-producing state, is still on hold as far as fieldwork is concerned in unirrigated areas. Just hasn't been raining there. That's not all that terribly unusual for this time of the year, but it is becoming more and more unusual as we move forward in time. A definite need for significant rain must show up as we get into the latter part of October. If we don't get it, we're probably going to hear more talk about possible cuts in production potential. This is a La Nina year. Brazil will usually see delayed early season rainfall in the north and then get better rains later in the year while the south part of Brazil turns drier in late November and December. same will be true for Uruguay and eastern Argentina, so we'll be watching for that as a possible impact on production later in the year.
Drew, we appreciate you being with us.
Thanks a lot, and have a good day.
Thanks much to you. Drew Lerner is the senior agricultural meteorologist at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and that is today's closing market report. Remember to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the markets, and don't forget you can listen to today's futures analysis, cash grain analysis, and the weather right there on our website, the address, willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.